My guest at this time is Sherilyn Harley Lebon. She is the co-chair of the Project 21 Black Leadership Council, which is a project of the National Center for Public Policy Research. She has filed amicus briefs on two of the cases that have already been decided this week by the U.S. Supreme Court. One, Shelby County, Alabama, against Attorney General Eric Holder, which the court ruled 5-4 on Tuesday. That section for the Voting Rights Act needs to be struck down as unconstitutional. And she also wrote a brief in favor of Fisher in Fisher versus the University of Texas. The court less clear on exactly what direction it wants to go there, but Project 21 sees it as a victory against racial preferences. And Sherilyn, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, pleasure is all mine.
Well, most of the heated rhetoric, there was plenty of it in the affirmative action case on Monday as well with Fisher and the University of Texas, but the reaction to Tuesday's decision on Shelby County, Alabama versus Eric Holder, the court essentially finding that there was cause for certain jurisdictions, states and localities to have to have a Justice Department or federal approval for changing any sorts of voting laws back in the 1960s when the Voting Rights Act was approved. Now the court's saying those same concerns don't exist anymore, even though there is discrimination in various cases here and there. The likes of Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson saying this is a major step back for Americans. You've got some pundits over on MSNBC saying that, well, citizenship was nice while it lasted. You like this decision. Explain why.
You know, I don't understand. I really don't understand the rhetoric from the other side because, Greg, the Voting Rights Act is very much intact. All the justices have said with respect to Section 4, and let me just explain to your readers, Section 4 sets the formula which is used to determine which state and local governments are going to have to then comply with Section 5, and Section 5 is the preclearance standards, right? And Section 5 basically says that state and local governments want to change their voting rights laws, then they do have to get pre-approval from DOJ, from the Voting Rights Division. So let's just kind of pierce back some of this rhetoric. The Voting Rights Act is very much intact. And what Congress is saying is that, what the Supreme Court is saying is that basically Congress has not done its job because the law on the books is from 1965. We're now at 2013, Greg. Demographics have changed. Issues have changed. Problems in those states, for the most part, have dissipated. And what you have alluded to, we have voting irregularities in various parts of the country, but they may not all be centered around these 20 states that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 specifically addressed. So what the Supreme Court said is basically, Congress, you need to do your job, and that it is Congress's job to come up with the appropriate standard based on 2013 modern-day applications. That's exactly what the Supreme Court is saying.
Sherilyn, basically the reaction to that argument that I've heard so far today is that, well, this essentially threw out the map. So as of right now, there are no states or localities that have to go through the Justice Department or federal courts to get their approval for changing any voting laws. And given the gridlock in Washington, there's going to be very hard to find agreement on exactly which states and localities ought to be on this list. So therefore, none of them probably will be.
I don't at all agree with that. I mean, the Voting Rights Act is a very important bill, and it's crucial to, you know, basically carrying out our election. I do think that Congress is going to be motivated to do this. And all the Supreme Court has said here is it's really difficult to enforce this unless Congress comes up with a new way of determining which states and localities require federal monitoring of elections. And that's very prudent and makes common sense because, for example, there were incidences of voter fraud in Pennsylvania, in Indiana. Those states weren't necessarily on the list. I think the Congress needs to come up with a new map because, for example, Greg, in some of those counties that we noted in the Shelby County Supreme Court decision, some of those counties are now 90% white. Why would we need to apply the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to a county which is 90% white? That doesn't make any sense at all. At all.
We're talking with Sherrilyn Harley-Lebon, co-chair of the Project 21 Black Leadership Council. And Sherrilyn, in our next couple of minutes here, let's look at the affirmative action decision. It was a 7-1 decision. Kagan recused herself. The only one who seemed to be in favor of the older version of the system, and that's straight-up racial preferences, was Justice Ginsburg.
Right.
The majority saying that really the lower court has to go back and look at this and figure things out with a little more specificity. Justice Thomas is the only one who said that he would have thrown out the 2003 University of Michigan case altogether. So how much has the ball actually moved on this issue as a result of this decision?
Actually, I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the Supreme Court has consistently ruled that decisions based on race and ethnic origins need to be reviewed under the 14th Amendment. And this strict scrutiny standard that we constantly talk about is, again, at issue in this decision. And the Supreme Court has set out a standard for universities to adhere to. The first prong of the strict scrutiny standard is they got to show compelling interest, okay, in advancing their policy or rule, right? Okay, and that's what was the job of University of Texas. Second, they have to show that the race-neutral policy, meaning their normal admissions policy, would not achieve the same result. Here, what they're saying to the Fifth Circuit is you're going to have to rehear this case based on a strict scrutiny standard because what you guys applied was too fast and loose. They didn't adhere to that strict scrutiny standard. And, you know, I think what some people miss here in Supreme Court decisions is that, you know, it's not the Supreme Court's job to do the lower court's job, okay? What exactly the Supreme Court said to the Fifth Circuit is basically, you didn't do your job. You didn't apply the strict scrutiny standard, which is the law of the land. So you wanted us to hear this case, and we've heard it. And now we're telling you, we're giving it back to you to rehear it based on a strict scrutiny standard and not be so fast and loose with these standards, which we've laid out for now, what they have laid out now, Greg, for almost 20 years.
Real quick, last question here, Sherrilyn, especially on the Fisher decision, but also on the Shelby decision today, a lot of fierce reaction, let's put it that way, to the comments that Justice Thomas has made. Some different descriptions of him, which I think a lot of folks on both sides of the debate would characterize as being pretty harsh. What do you make of the way his rhetoric and his opinion on these decisions as a black justice on this court have been treated?
Well, I just think that this has been the MO since he's been on the bench. The left and his opponents have not wanted him on the bench, and he's on for life. And in my opinion, I think Justice Thomas should be treated just like the other justices and not being singled out by the people who don't like him based on race. Now, that is racism, and that is a double standard, Greg.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg. My pleasure.
Sherrilyn Harley-Lebon, co-chair of the Project 21 Black Leadership Council. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.